I have an assignment in 2 weeks from down at Blue Ridge. And they gave me a title, and I've been meditating on this for the last couple of months here, and I thought I'd share what I have put together for this assignment, share it here this morning, and then I'd ask for input. If you think of something or something I should correct or something I could add to this, assignments can be a little tough. And I'd like to just bring that here this morning. The title they gave me, Turning Disabilities into Possibilities. Turning Disabilities into Possibilities. And so I went to Webster and I said, what's a disability? Typically when we think of a disability, we think of a handicap, don't we? Webster said it's a physical or mental condition that limits a person's movements, senses, or activities. It's a handicap. And the first part of this message, I'd like to just maybe give a section here that I don't think was the intended angle that this message was to look at, but I'd like to think about the possibilities to bless the disabled and our responsibility in that. And I hope some of these things I say here aren't just me and that I reveal myself. I like to think I'm partially normal. And here's one of them. Don't we too often look at a handicap and miss the person? Wouldn't it be much better? Wouldn't we have a lot better ability to bless them if we see the person in spite of the handicap or with the handicap and accept them that way? And it depends on the severity of the condition and how much it limits their normal life activities, what we count as normal. There's different levels of how we relate to them as a person. But almost everyone, regardless of their disability, there are very, very few people in this world who do not have the capacity to feel love and acceptance and self-worth, and certainly the capacity to feel the opposite and to just be pretty keen to pick that up. And so we each have a responsibility and an obligation to show Christ's love to others, especially those with handicaps, especially those who may be disabled, whose condition limits their ability to learn and work or care for themselves. Children, you're never too young to learn this. Regardless of a person's disabilities or handicaps, they have feelings. And they know if you love and accept them or not. Think about Jesus and how many individuals in the Bible, in the Gospels, that he encountered who we would put in the category of disabled. Various conditions. And we're impressed over and over again that it didn't matter how busy Jesus was, he had time to touch their lives. Turn to John chapter 9. Jesus gives us a very valuable principle in relation to this that I hope we all know very well, but let's remind ourselves, let's refresh it, let's rivet it in our minds. This is a familiar story, John chapter 9, verse 1. Jesus passed by and he saw a man which was blind from his birth. A handicapped person, blind, disabled. He had a condition that limited his movements, senses, and activities. And look at verse 2. His disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And source, I forget where I read it, somewhere I read that especially in these times, there was a big emphasis on this thought, that if someone was blind or handicapped, that it was a result of sin. Jesus answered, verse 3, "Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." And so Jesus took the time that day to give his disciples and us a valuable lesson and to totally discredit that notion that handicaps are some kind of result of sin in the life of the parents or the handicapped person. It is true, increasingly true in our day-to-day, that many, many handicaps, many disabilities are the result of sin, drugs and such like. That's true. And many handicaps are the result of carelessness or accident. But Jesus, I believe, would tell us, we're not God. We don't know and we don't need to know. And I had to, here again, maybe expose myself, but do we not tend to label some of these things, and do we not try to pass off responsibility and try to pass judgment on some of these situations? Isn't the root cause to somehow soothe our conscience because we aren't accepting and loving like we should? Maybe that's not always the case, but let's never fall into that situation where we start to think like these disciples. Jesus says, this is so the works of God can be manifest. And in each situation where there are disabilities, there are huge possibilities for God's work to be manifest. Maybe it's in the life of the disabled person themselves. Many, many times, it's in the lives of those who care for them. Many times. And it needs to be in the lives of all who show love. God's work manifest in this way. We need to show the love and compassion of Jesus. I came across a quote, "Persons with disabilities are an integral part of the fabric of life." And ponder that, and it's exactly true. I believe it with all my heart. Persons with disabilities are an integral part of the fabric of life. Let me ask you a few questions. If you took an eraser and took out of the Gospels every account where Jesus had and the disciples had met a disabled person, how much would be missing about what we know about Jesus? If you took an eraser and erased out of your life from as far back as you can remember, and even before, hopefully, every encounter and opportunity you've had to relate to a disabled person, someone who maybe it was a learning disability, various stages of disability. If you would erase all those experiences from your life, how imbalanced would you be as a person? I firmly believe that those experiences are planned by God to give us, to balance us out and to teach us a lot of lessons in life. What all would be missing from our society and churches if there were never any disabilities among us? A lot. God has designed it. Persons with disabilities are an integral part of the fabric of life. Let's follow the example of David. Let's give the Mephibosheths of today acceptance and a place among us, in our groups, in our lives. Include them, love them, find possibilities to bless them. Because it's God's plan that our lives and theirs will both find fulfillment if we all take our place in that. Now I'd like to go to the main part of the message, turning disabilities into possibilities. And Webster had another definition of disability, and this may be, I believe, more the intended angle of the title. I talked with Jimmy Weaver and I asked him a bit, and Webster says a disability can also be defined as a disqualification, a restriction, or disadvantage. We understand disadvantages. We're going to look at some of them that we face. And Webster says that possibilities, when used in the plural form, often refer to potential or prospective value. So we could title this Turning Disadvantages into Potential, or Seeing the Potential in Disadvantages, Turning a Negative into a Positive. How can we relate to disadvantages and restrictions in our lives? And some of them are out of our control. Some of them are self-imposed. Some are simply circumstances that we find ourselves in. Some are the result of others' doings and consequences of what others have done, and nothing we could help about it. It's outside of our choice. Some disadvantages are perceived. Some are actual. There are many, many, many circumstances and situations that feel like a disability to us. They're a restriction, they're a disadvantage. And I'd like to look for an outline. I think I have five Bible characters we'd like to look at and how they've dealt with disadvantages in their lives, and see if we can learn how to see, how to turn disadvantages, disabilities into potential and impossibilities. And most of these are long Bible stories, and I'm going to count heavily on our Bible knowledge this morning. We can't go into all their story, but we'd like to look at little parts of their lives and statements they've made that I believe help us as we look at disabilities. The first one I've chosen to look at is Joseph. Joseph was so mistreated by his brothers. He was sold there into Egypt. He was separated from his parents, and as far as he knew, he probably would never see him again. He didn't know if his dad was alive or dead. But something just seemed to be his lot in life. It followed him right to Egypt, and this unfair, terrible treatment continued down there, and he was thrown into prison for the sin of another. And it seemed like he was forgotten there. And there are things like that in our lives that feel ever so negative to us. They feel like disadvantages that can't be overcome, and they disable us. They restrict our ability to learn and work. And I think for many of us, right on the top of that list of disadvantages and negatives is mistreatment by others, an unfair fallout that we suffer because of something terrible someone else has done, intentionally or otherwise. And even worse, if it's intentional, like Joseph's brother's mistreatment was. Is there anyone here that hasn't allowed those kind of things to cripple you a bit? And there's times in our lives when this has become a disability, and it becomes a condition that hinders our ability to be productive. When we're mistreated by others, it tends to do that. It limits our ability to learn and grow and be productive. And I had to use my imagination a little bit. You can turn back to Genesis chapter 50. And I imagined, what if Joseph would show up here this morning, and after the service we'd start talking to him in the back, and Joseph would start telling us all that happened to him, and he'd start explaining the events of his life and how he was treated by his brothers and how he went to Egypt. We wouldn't be shocked at all to hear this story coming from a bitter, shriveled up old man, just scarred and hardly coping with life. That wouldn't be surprising, would it? Think about it. Think about how he was treated. We wouldn't be at all surprised to find that Joseph would, as we get to know him, we find out that he struggles to cope. And these things from the past are just a drag on him. The extreme mistreatment through his younger years and the disadvantages became a disability to Joseph. They crippled him. They crippled his ability to have good relationships. That happens to many people, doesn't it? Mistreatment in their younger years cripples their ability to have solid relationships all through life. And as we get to know Him better, we learn just how deep and sore His hurts are from the past, and about the only friends He has are those that can kind of nurse each other's wounds and are who are hurting like Him, and they kind of keep each other hurting. And we shake our heads and we're sorry before Joseph, and after all, what chance did the poor man have? Can you relate to any of these thought processes in our society today? That's pretty common. And this kind of bitterness about things in the past is just like a crippling disease, and it shrivels people up and it curls them up and to where every move hurts and everything anybody says hurts, and anything that comes along adds to their hurts, and they're disabled. It ruins many. I don't know when all Joseph dealt with all this and how, but toward the end of his life here in Genesis 50, we have these words. Let's read chapter 50, starting at verse 19. Joseph was talking to his brothers, and he said unto them, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Total opposite of the Joseph I imagined meeting here in the back. Totally the opposite. I think Joseph understood that God's list of disadvantages looks totally different than ours. What you meant for evil, God actually was working for good. And that's what he told his brothers. God had possibilities. God had potential for Joseph to do almost unthinkable amount of good. Right along and amidst all these trials, God was working in Joseph's life. And so, whether our disadvantages and restrictions become disabilities or possibilities depends on my perspective and whether I'm willing to trust God that He has this all in control. How we choose to relate to the disadvantages of what we're facing, even things that are others' mistreatment. Can we have enough faith in God to believe that He could be meaning it for good for us and for others? The second one I thought of was Gideon. And you can turn to Judges chapter 6. Gideon was just an obscure man that liked to play low key. He was just off doing his job, just doing a low job. He wasn't out making a scene. He wasn't a leader. He wasn't a go-ahead kind of man. He did better behind the scenes. And here comes God in Judges chapter 6. It says there was an angel came. But then it says, verse 14, that the Lord looked upon him and said, "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" And he said unto him, "O my Lord, wherewithal shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." Gideon says, "Lord, you have the wrong man. This isn't me." God wanted to take him way out of his comfort zone. And there's feelings like this that are natural to each one of us. We can all look around and compare ourselves to others. And when we do that, we soon figure out we're not the qualified person. Look at this man over here. He's a natural leader. People tend to follow him. He knows how to say it. And we can all look at the call of God in our lives, whatever it is, and we can say, "Not me, Lord. I can't. There's all these reasons why I'm not the person for this." Moses felt that way too, and we're not going to read that. I did my study, Exodus 3 and 4, and I was impressed again. Moses had a whole list of excuses to the point where it says the Lord was very angry. "Lord, it won't work. They won't believe me. I can't speak anyway." They're going to look at me and say, who are you? And can we relate to that? We get calls from the school boards. We get calls from the Sunday school superintendents. And we get calls from here and there. And it's God calling. And we say, nope, not me. I'm not cut out for that. But we need to look at what are we doing? Are we just comparing ourselves? And is our fear based on the fear of failure, the fear of getting outside of our comfort zone? If it is, it will disable us. It will be a disability. We can heap up all these disadvantages to the point that they're disabilities instead of possibilities. But if we take to heart the words of the Lord back here in Judges chapter 6, verse 16, the Lord said unto Gideon, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. God will enable us to fulfill our calling. God needs not such able people. God needs willing people. God needs people who are willing to step out of the comfort zone and step up when He calls. Let's not let our fears become a disability. But let's have God's strength open the possibilities. We talked about Moses a bit. And there was another part of Moses' life. As I looked and I read over those excuses that Moses was making and that dialogue between Moses and God, it doesn't mention it in there. But surely Moses was thinking about it. How many years before, Moses' zeal and loyalty to God's people got him in the middle of that fight with the Egyptian and the Israelite. And I believe he did it out of loyalty. And it all backfired on him. He had to leave, and he spent all these years out in the desert. Can any of us relate to the disabling of past failures? And God says, I want you to do this. No, Lord, it won't work. I failed. I did my best, and I'm a failure. Satan is so good at that. I'm sure all of us have faced some of that because we all make mistakes. And God called Moses to go right back to where it all messed up and start again. And Moses said, God, I can't do it. They're not going to accept me. They didn't last time. Satan is such an expert at hurling these kind of accusations in front of us and disabling us, limiting our production, limiting our ability to move and act and go where God wants us to. We studied Saul in our Sunday school lesson here. It was maybe 2 weeks ago, Saul's conversion. And Ananias, God said, Ananias, go over here to this street, and Saul's over there and he's praying. I need you to go. And Ananias said, God, I know who this man is. I know what he's done. Surely not. And we have that verse in Acts 9, verse 15. I'm sorry, I didn't have it written here. Let's turn to Acts 9, 15. When God was talking to Ananias, and he said, Acts 9, verse 15, the Lord said unto him, go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and children and the children of Israel. God told Ananias, in spite of Saul and his extreme persecution of the church, he's repented and he's a chosen vessel. And that's something we each need to claim. When Satan and maybe others, people, throw up accusations in front of us and remind us of past failures. And the tendency is to become crippled by that and to tuck our head in and not want to say a word because I failed in the past and I better not try again. We aren't ready to take the risk. But remember that we can claim verse 15 for ourselves. You are a chosen vessel unto me. I have work for you to do. Get up. Move on. That's what Saul did. And that's what many Christians, every Christian in the past has done. I believe every Christian has failed and got back up. And we need to keep that in focus, that we are a chosen vessel in spite of past failures. Don't let Satan cripple you with accusations of things that are under the blood. There are too many possibilities and too much potential in the future to allow that to hold us back. I thought of Esther as well. Esther was in a situation where circumstances were out of her control. I doubt that any of this was her dream as a younger girl, and as she thought about her life and thought about the future. And surely she had to question, as life went on there in the palace, is God in control? Are things actually out of control? I'm sure it felt that way. She was a victim of circumstances. Life was so unfair, and what could be the purpose of all this? Why would she be here? And what good could possibly come out of all this? She had to feel trapped in an impossible situation. Haman had things sewed up. Things were going from bad to worse. Things were just, where was God anyway? But then it was Mordecai who told her and challenged her with these words. And he said, "Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And Mordecai dared to have the faith and to say, God might have all this in his plan and control. All these things are for a purpose. In spite of all these circumstances that are so unfairly stacked against her, Mordecai and Esther chose to make the best of their situation and do their best and to follow God's plan against all odds. Here we are, we read the story, and we know the outcome. We know the whole story, and it's easy for us to say that. But right there in the middle of it all, Mordecai and Esther had two options. They could throw up their hands and say, it's no use, it's over. Or they could choose to believe in faith that even their situation was in God's control and purpose. Whenever we throw up our hands and we give up and all that's left to do is to bemoan the terrible plight that we're in, we're disabled. We can't move on. It has limited our productive activities. When we choose to believe that God is in control and that even circumstances that don't make any sense to us are in his control, then there's possibilities. It's our choice to accept or despair when circumstances seem out of control. The fifth one I'd like to look at, we looked at him some already. We called him Saul, and now we'd like to look at him at Paul. The same man. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Verse 7. This is a pretty familiar account. We know about Paul's thorn in the flesh. Verse 7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me." Why doesn't Paul, or somewhere in the Bible, one of the other writers, why don't they tell us what Paul's thorn in the flesh is? I found it rather amusing. I have a Bible program on my computer, and it has maybe a dozen different commentators on there. And with this verse, I just started clicking on different commentators' ideas. What was Paul's thorn in the flesh? And I don't know that any of them agreed. And some of their thoughts were ludicrous. And such a wide range of what this could have been and all different ideas of how to explain it. And I'm impressed that no one knows what Paul's thorn in the flesh was for a specific reason. I believe that God wants each one of us to be able to put our limitations, our disabilities, if you will, our restrictions, our disadvantages into this and be able to relate to this like Paul and to claim Paul's method of relating to this for our own. Let's look at that. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, let's start at verse 9. After he asked God three times to remove this thorn, and he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Paul says, Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. Disabilities do not need to be disabilities. Disadvantages, thorns in the flesh, can become possibilities when we have the testimony of Paul. It was a possibility for God's grace to be put on display in his life, for him to experience and for others to observe. I looked up the definition of some of these words here that he mentions in verse 10. It's words that we don't use very often. Infirmities. And that simply means frailties of the body, weakness and sickness. And we're accustomed to that. We know about some infirmities. And as we get older, it seems we find more and more about the frailty of the human body. And we suffer more and more from weakness and sickness. Reproaches, insults and hurts. And we don't have to be very old to learn about that. Insults and hurts. And Paul says, I glory in insults and hurts. I glory in necessities, distressing needs of necessity, needs not being met. Paul said, I glory in them. I glory in persecutions, suffering inflicted by others, and hostility, in distresses, calamity and anguish. When we, like Paul, accept the disadvantage in our lives, they don't become disabilities. They become possibilities. They become potential. But when we chafe and resist and rebel against our lot in life, whether our brothers sold us into Egypt, or whether God is calling us way outside of our comfort zone, or when we failed and we feel there's no hope again, or we find ourselves trapped in an impossible situation and there's no way out, whatever the situation, each time we have the opportunity to look at it through God's perspective and see potential for possibilities, for blessing, or we can allow it to disable us and to make us useless and to make us a detriment to our brethren and to turn us bitter and a liability to the community. There is great potential to experience not only the limitless and sufficient grace of God that Paul talks about, that God told him, My grace is sufficient. There's no limits. It's always adequate. But there's also these infirmities and distresses and insults and all these things, they open up the possibilities for us to experience the strength of Christ in our lives. Because when we are weak, then we're strong through Christ. It's then that we can actually glory in our disabilities, in our disadvantages. This is humanly totally impossible. But the same man that wrote these verses here tells the Galatians, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Through Christ's strength, I can overcome these things. They don't need to be disabilities. They don't need to disable me. And every one of us here can experience the same. But don't underestimate only the possibilities of what God can do to bless you as an individual. Yesterday, I was talking to a good friend of mine, a minister in one of our congregations, and he just told me about a brother in their congregation that I don't know, I've never met, I don't know anything about him, but he just said he's got a terrible past. And to him, all this from the past feels like such a disability to him. He feels it's a hindrance. But my friend told me what he doesn't understand is what a blessing that is to each of us, brethren, as we watch him and we see the grace of God on display in his life and what God is able to make out of it regardless of his past, in spite of his past. So don't look for all the possibilities as you have and relate to life's disadvantages. And as we look at them from God's perspective, like Joseph, and say, well, God meant it for good, we can reach out and bless others that we will never know till eternity. Just trust God that he knows what he's doing. Because just like we can turn and read so many accounts in the Bible and we can see it, how it ended, I believe that if we're faithful and our story was written, that others would be able to read the story of our lives and they would say God knew what he was doing. And I believe that as we're in eternity praising God forever, that's one of the things that will inspire our praise, is the ability to look back over our lives and just see how great God was and how all these things were meant for good. And God helped us through. It's worth being faithful. It's worth facing disadvantages. It's worth facing hurts. It's worth all the trials that life has if we don't allow them to disable us, but allow it to Christ's strength to work in our lives. Let's kneel for prayer.